This is Arsene Wenger. Welcome to FIFA Training Center.
You're listening to FIFA Insight Live, a Training Center podcast. Throughout the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar, we are taking you inside the game like never before. This fly-on-the-wall audio experience is putting you inside the car with our team of experts as they travel to all 64 matches at the FIFA World Cup. In this first episode, ahead of kickoff in Qatar, we speak with Arsene Wenger and Chris Loxton of the FIFA Training Centre as they explain what we can expect of the World Cup and from this podcast.
I'm Chris Loxton. I'm the group leader of the Football Performance Analysis and Insights team here at FIFA.
I'm Arsene Wenger, Chief of Global Football Development.
Arsene Wenger and Chris Loxton, it's great to be here with the FIFA Training Centre. The 2022 World Cup is almost upon us and it promises to be an intriguing one. What are your expectations for this World Cup, Arsene?
I believe that I call it a little bit the World Cup of a last chance for the great players who have, of course, shown us all that talent in the last 10, 15 years. They go there and think it's now or never. And it's a bit exciting to see that because you have Messi, Neymar, Benzema, you know, all these players who are top of the world, Ronaldo, Lewandowski. They go all to, they go there and think, this is my chance. That's why I would say the tension will be very high. I believe as well it will be the World Cup of the freshness, because for the first time the players will go to the World Cup with only maximum 20 games played. It's a World Cup as well. The players can stay in the same room for the whole World Cup, you know. Before you always come home at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, you take your luggage in 9 o'clock and you travel to the next destination. This time, 2 hours after the game, they're in their bed, they can recover. So I expect a very physical, very hectic and very tense World Cup with all the teams being at their best level.
Do you think it makes a massive difference being based in the same place for the whole time?
I would say yes. You would ask any player, you know, to stay at the same place and not to have to move, to pack again and go to the next game. I'm convinced it's comfortable in your mind as well. And, you know, you can only focus on the next game, get to recovery work with your physios and not travel. It will make a huge difference for the teams to go far.
And as a manager and a coach as well, I guess it has a big impact too.
Yes, you know your training conditions. You can leave everything there. You know how you can work. When you travel, you go to different places. You have always to analyze again what kind of material have you available. How is the pitch? Oh, this pitch is too hard. They didn't water it, you know. You can master better all the conditions that allow you to work in very good conditions. It will be much more comfortable for the coaches as well. And believe me, they don't like to travel as well.
And what fascinates you most about this tournament?
For me, the most fascinating is the fact that the world is in one city. At the period where you have tension points all over the world, you know, and for us, my deep hope is that the whole world could show the fraternity and the message of togetherness and peace. That would be absolutely wonderful. That's why I may be a dreamer, but that's my secret hope, that in a moment where every day we ask ourselves, do we go to war or not? And to give that kind of message of peace and tolerance and acceptance of everybody, and as well, of happiness to celebrate football. And I'm grateful to the happiness football gave me all my life, and the World Cup is the biggest opportunity to do it. And I must say as well, even if I put myself, I was not a great fan to play in winter, but if I had not the possibility to go to the World Cup, even at home in winter, to watch football all day on television, I would be very happy, you know, because it's a good time to watch television. And that's why for people who cannot travel and cannot go, to have that opportunity as well when it's dark early, You want to be inside. You do not want to be outside. And when you have inside to watch the best football in the world, it's a fantastic opportunity.
You said there that you're a dreamer, and dreamers, all dreamers have visions. And really what this whole project that you've embarked on here at FIFA is, I guess, a product of those dreams and that vision that you have. Can you explain a little bit about to us about the whole concept of the performance analysis and the level of analysis that's gone on over the last couple of years, and what the role of the TSG, the Technical Study Group, actually is now?
Well, overall, we created an analysis of competitions and of the games because we want to understand better and discover as well the beauty of a game through the analysis. That's the main target. It's not to show that you have to be super intelligent to understand football. It's just to see and love more football because we understand what's going on the pitch. So the analysis gives us a better input, a better, deeper view of what's going on the football pitch. And even when you're a fan of a team, you want to understand, why did we win? Why did we lose this game? And not only have an opinion, but if your opinion is, of course, strengthened by the numbers that you get from the analysis, I think it's something that gets people to understand better the game. And on top of that, the technical study group is observers, specialists who have spent their life in the game, you know, and can help us to contribute to understand better the game. And the combination of data analytics and the analysis of a technical study group will give us a better view of what's happened on a football pitch and why the teams win and why the teams lose and why some players are absolutely important in the team.
I think it's probably fair to say that with all the data, the resources that we have now available, and the different lens that the technical observations of the coaches that and former players that can bring, you can't have one without the other. You need both to give each other the context, don't you, and the big picture and the real picture, I guess.
Yes, the combination of the two is vital. And where the technical study group is important is that they can put into perspective the data analytics and they can analyze what is really important in a game because of their observation, because of their expertise. These people have expertise, they have experience, and that has to come above the analysis of the game and get to conclusions that everybody will understand.
And sometimes, I guess, the data can give us a certain picture of trends or patterns and things that are about. But sometimes the story can actually be in the outlier, in the piece of data, or that, you know, the thing that's different. And that's where the coach's eye probably really focuses and really picks up things sometimes that the data doesn't necessarily pick up.
Yes, of course, because you can explain, for example, if a right winger had a great game, the technical study group specialist can tell you as well, look, but the left back on the other side was very poor, you know. So the numbers are exceptional, but they can a little bit explain why the numbers were exceptional. But as well, sometimes the data shows you just the structure of the team. For example, when we take now the French national team who played in the last World Cup and won the last World Cup, when you see at halftime that they had an attack 10 times on the right and 2 times on the left, you can say, look, because Mbappé plays on the right and Matuidi, who is a defensive midfielder, plays on the left. So in this case, the numbers show you straight away what happened, and you compare to the structure of a team and you understand well.
And Chris, if we bring you in here, so can you explain the composition of the technical study group for this World Cup?
Yep, so we have technical experts. So Arsène will be the chairman, the leader of the technical study group. But we also have representatives from all around the world. So Jürgen Klinsmann representing UEFA, but also having coached in the USA for 6 years, representing CONCACAF in North America. We have Farid Mondragon, a goalkeeper specialist from Colombia, representing CONMEBOL South America. We have Alberto Zaccheroni, who is revered coach Arsene, we could say, from Italy, coaching in almost all teams in the Italian Serie A. We have Sunday Olesi from Nigeria, representing CAF and the African region. And we have Duri Char, Korean national team player. Pascal Zubabula, our goalkeeper specialist here in FIFA, Swiss national team player, of course. So we have really a group that represents the regions around the world. And I think why do we do that is because, Arsene, you know as well as I do, football is played very differently around the world. So it's important that we have real specialists, but people that understand football in that region.
Yes, and of course, the cultural specificity has to come out through the diversity of the people who are in this group. And as well, I believe it's a world selection as well. You know, we are at the World Cup. You want opinions from people all over the world. And sometimes we have very interesting discussions because everybody sees the game a little bit in a different way. But it's always in a good mood and in a good atmosphere, you know, and it's always very interesting as well, and intense sometimes.
I'm going to come back to the intensity in those chats in a little bit. But if we just talk about the way that the analysis is done, and as you rightly say, you know, the cultures, so many different cultures, so many different interpretations, so many different styles of play. When you collect the football data, the use of the football language is obviously really, really important, which is on the FIFA Training Centre. So, Chris, can you just talk to us about that collection process and how it aligns everything?
Yeah, so look, the FIFA football language was probably the first thing we decided to build, simply because Arsene's vision was not just to do snapshot analysis, so not just to look at one tournament and then go to the next tournament and look at that one tournament again. What we actually want to do is compare longitudinally what happened in 2010, what happened in 2014, what happened in 2018. So when we get to 2022, we actually have some benchmark information and we can actually start to see where football is going as well. So to do that, we needed a unified set of data definitions, right? So Arsene, we sat for, well, we didn't sit in your office for 2 years. It felt like 2 years at one stage when we were trying to define all of this. But, you know, we really went into the detail. And one of the key things we said as well is that much of the data that's currently on the market only looks at when the player has the ball at the feet. So we said, we know that a player actually is only on the ball for around 1 minute, 49 seconds. We said that actually we need to look at what they do when they don't have the ball. So when their team are in possession, what are the other players doing? The other 10 players on the pitch, what are they doing? So we have new metrics such as offering to receive, which is when a player either signals, changes body shape or makes a clear movement in a clear attempt to receive the ball. Every time a player makes those movements, even if they don't receive the ball, we capture that piece of information. So we have a new way to look at the game, which actually now gives us around 5.5 minutes of data coverage per player. And Arsene, we've seen some of the numbers that come out from that. And it's quite interesting when you start to see the profiles of players, not just looking at what they do with the ball.
Yes, of course. And first, I would like to say that there's a huge amount of work. My team worked very hard, you know, to get to that level of perfection. It gives us, collect the data, you need to create a common language because you have a harmony from game to game, you know. Is this a back pass or is it a cross, for example, you know. But everybody knows exactly the difference that we collect always the data in every game. So through the tournament gives us a harmony and for a longer distance as well, because we collect the data ourselves, we will be capable to compare competition and the evolution of a competition, and as well select the trends that are important because we collect ourselves the data. So that is, of course, absolutely important, and there's a huge amount of work behind that.
I think it's such a good point because when you think about the averages, and you've mentioned there the players in possession on average 1 minute, 49 seconds in a game, but what that creates also is context and be able to benchmark. What does normal look like? What does exceptional look like? What does below par look like? So, for example, during the Club World Cup, we had Thiago Silva and the amount of possession he had, he was over 5 minutes. So we knew that was really, really exceptional. So the data doesn't just measure, I guess, what the performances actually look like. It gives the opportunity to benchmark performances as well.
Yes, but these numbers, they give us, when you take the example of of Thiago Silva, it shows us as well how the other team approached the game. They decided to leave the ball to Thiago Silva in that defensive way, and that explains why he was so had so many balls and why he was so many times on the ball. And this is where the number highlights and where the technical study group comes in, you know. They will give a deeper perspective of the number and analysis and explain why this happens on the football pitch. And most of the time, sometimes it's down to the strategy of the opponent team, and sometimes it's down to the individual quality of the player. But what we would like to do during this tournament is to explain why collectively a team was better, or why individually this player was shining on the day. So it's a combination of team explanation and as well highlighting the individual performances of the players.
And this is probably a really good point to bring in the EFIs, as we call them, the Enhanced Football Intelligence. And straight away, you know, we think it, there's 11 of them, and these are metrics, I guess, that the football fans are going to become familiar with over the course of this World Cup. But one that we should probably mention, it's probably a good point to mention, Arsene, particularly when you talk about the impact that the opposition have on a team's ability to play or what they're trying to do, is when we talk about the phases of play and the game states. And this is going to be a really revolutionary metric from which we can show not just what the opposition team are doing, but where they are and what their intention is, as well as the team that's in possession of the ball.
Why have we built these? I think probably is a good place to start as well. Is, you know, Arsene, part of your vision was, yes, we want to better understand football around the world and educate people about football, but we also want to try and bring some of this to the fans to try and improve the viewing experience. So our team of, we have a team of football performance analysts, data scientists, data engineers, and over the last two and a half years, they've basically created a set of what we're calling these enhanced football intelligence statistics and metrics that the world is now going to see on their TV screens during the World Cup. So part of what we've built then of those 11 is this phase of play metric. And I think what we're trying to do here is actually just break down the style of play. So for example, we have build-up phase. So how long do teams spend circulating the ball between the centre-backs, the full-backs and the goalkeepers, trying to find that option to play forwards? And I know verticality is something you speak about a lot, and trying to play through teams, but we'll have the build-up, we'll have the progression, we'll have the time they spent in the final third when we're talking about in possession, and then out of possession, the high block, the high press, which we see a lot now, certainly in European football, teams trying to get the ball back quickly, or how long do they spend in a mid block, in the middle of the pitch, or deep in a low block. And if we think back to the last World Cup, compact defending in a low, deep block was one of the trends. If we see it again this time or not, we're about to find out very shortly, but we'll have the data to actually show that, and the technical experts will be able to interpret that as well, Arsene.
Yes, of course. And I would like to reassure people, you know, we will not make it more complicated to understand. We want to make it more simple. Simple, but showing why it happened. For example, Chris spoke a lot about this analysis of teams. But when you have, for example, the compactness of a team, what we call the distance between the lowest defender and the highest striker, and that you find out at the end of a competition that the team who has the shortest distances were in the final, it could be one of the explanations that was important for success. You know, that's what we want to highlight. That's why we analyze the different team data, to explain better why the teams win or lose. And as well, if you find out, for example, that the team who placed more ball behind the defenders was the most successful team, it creates trends where people, the coaches, then can say, oh, this is an important ingredient in modern game. So in the youth training sessions, normal training sessions for senior players, that this trend will be transferred into training sessions, but will be in fact on our training center, and give examples how you can work on that.
And that team length EFI that you're just alluding to there is really important, because when you look at the team length, if they're really narrow and really compact, it shows where the space is. And then what you need then is the players to recognise where the space is and to be able to, as you say, play in behind or exploit the space down the wings, or if they're using to shift the team in build up and switch until something opens up so they can play through. Again, those types of metrics really make a difference when you're talking about coaching and actually what the game itself looks like. So you're simplifying it.
Yes, and that of course creates the fact that the teams, like you say, are compact and play basically defensively on the width of the pitch, creates new compulsory problems for the teams who in the build-up and who attack in the final third. That means you will have to combine the transversal movements with the vertical movements, that you will be basically a little bit in the position of a handball team, where you have face a block and you have to destabilize the block, of course, then the quality of the movement, the speed of the passing, the switching sides will become very important, and through our numbers, we'll be capable to show that.
And I guess that brings us really naturally now into line breaks. So where are the lines being broken and how are the lines being broken? And that's another one of our EFIs.
Yes, that as well was a subject of long discussions between Chris, his team, myself, you know, and it is very important, because it's basically, like Chris highlighted it, the verticality of a game depends on how much you're capable to break the lines. The easy solution is always to play wide and lateral, but the effective and the efficient solution is, of course, to try to break the line and play through your opponent.
And one of the things, Arsene, you always spoke about when we started this project, certainly in Arsenal, is that you hated teams receiving the ball behind your two centre midfielders.
Yes, it is when you give many possessions away behind your midfield, you're in trouble, because you allow the opponent midfielder to turn and to face your defenders. You have no shield anymore. And this is one of the trends that are explainable through our numbers today, but the teams today are obsessed not to give possession away behind their midfield. And the teams who do that are in trouble, you know, and that will come out with the numbers that we will show.
And the great thing is, Arsene, we have not only the line breaks, so we have the number of times the midfield line is broken, the number of times the defensive line is broken, but actually we also have another EFI that talks about receptions. So we have the player giving the pass, but we also have the player receiving the pass. And we know from the tournaments we've implemented our data on so far that receptions behind the defensive line are quite highly correlated to match outcomes. So we would expect to see that the teams that make more defensive line breaks are the ones that go further in the World Cup.
Yes, that looks logical. You know, once you run against your own goal as a defender, you're in trouble. And so overall, all these data that we will analyze will highlight that. And we hope, I'm very positive about that, that we'll be capable to show that through numbers and as well to explain it in a very simple way.
And what's really interesting as well, it's not just about a player receiving between the lines. We can also see when a player offers to receive between the lines or in behind. So it's not, sometimes it can be decoys, it can be making those little movements in order to create space somewhere else. So again, you're getting that a little bit more holistic picture about the impact that certain players have on a game and a team's performance.
And I think that's the difference, Arsene. So we'll have this live, these live EFI metrics, which, you know, that will be on the TV screens and fans around the world will see during the game. But that's why we also have the technical study group. We have our own football data collection team that when we do see something, we can go back, you know, 4 hours after the game, we're going to have the data. So we're going to be in the car, we're going to see, we'll have that debrief after the game, but then we're also going to have the data to support what we've seen as well. So we can do a more in-depth analysis.
Exactly. And as you highlighted, Lisa, the fact you have as well players who offer many times to receive but do not get the ball, then you can say, for example, it's a problem in the build-up of a game, because the guys who have the ball at the back do not see quickly enough where their partner offers to receive. And that's when Chris talked about analyze what's happening on the ball and off the ball. The offers to receive is an important part of that, because we can say, look, this player's offered many times to receive, but he did only get the ball 10% of the time. That means some way is a problem with his partners in the quality of the passing and of the vision.
Or it could be a problem with the offers he's making, because if he's not making
exactly
good offers.
As well. That's where the technical study group comes in.
Absolutely. And if we look at, zoom out again, because you've done the analysis, we're going to be doing this level of analysis on this World Cup, but also, again, the opportunity to benchmark off the last World Cup, which also has been analysed in the same way, retrospectively. So what would you say are the key areas where you feel that international football has evolved since then?
I would say since then, the compactness of the team has improved a lot. The counter press has improved a lot. The pressing has become universal now, and the players who cannot press have been kicked out of our national teams, basically, even of football, you know. And overall, I would say as well, the reception behind the defenders, because of a consequence of a press is that the teams play very high and offer more space behind them. So that is as well. And one major revolution is a goalkeeper, you know. The goalkeeper today is a playmaker, and the quality of his distribution is an important key for success, and sometimes as well important for losing games, because the quality of his distribution is vital today. So the teams play higher up. Because they defend higher up, they are more vulnerable behind. So it will be very interesting to see how many times the ball is played behind the defenders, how many times the teams concede goals when they are in the build-up in their own half. And these are, in my opinion, the biggest trends since Russia.
And I think that's going to be the fun for us as well, is that we actually can start to, I suppose, merge some of these metrics together. So if we know teams are making more offers in behind, we can actually then look at, okay, what's the defensive line heights difference between 2018 and 2022?
And I guess as well, what comes into that is, as you talked about, Arsene, is the evolution of the goalkeeper again, both in and out of possession, their connection and the distance from their defensive line, not just out of possession, where they might be a bit of a sweeper if the ball breaks through, but also in possession.
Also in possession, yes, because today, even in possession, the goalkeeper is a sweeper, you know, and he plays very high up, and he's glued to his defense. And the distance of a modern goalkeeper is basically stable between him and the center backs. And that will be very interesting to analyze as well. And overall, he's always a solution to get out of a press. And in my opinion, sometimes too much, but that would be another interesting trend. How much will the defenders refuse to go back to the goalkeeper or not? Because I've seen free kicks in opponent half, the ball finishing at their own goalkeeper because they played it short in the first pass and couldn't get out of the press. They come back. So it's an important resource to start. He's the starter of the build-up. And sometimes you have to go back again and start to build up again.
And I guess that's something that Pascal Zuberbühler is really passionate about, is are teams playing with 11 players or are they playing with 10? And I guess that's something that he'll be keeping a real eye on during this tournament.
I mean, also in the football language, we've, for Pascal, but also for the rest of the world, we've created a real in-depth way to start looking at goalkeepers and the goalkeeper involvement as well. So, I mean, the football language is not just for outfield players. You know, we can't forget the goalkeepers, of course, because they are so integrated in the performance now.
And I think if we look at, again, the evolution of the game, Arsene, do you think rigid formations are becoming less important and that teams are much more principle-based in how they approach the games?
The tactical flexibility has improved a lot as well. You know, the teams move from five defenders to four to three. All the flexibility is most of the time dictated by the result at the moment of a game they change. And as well by the problem they face, because the teams know each other much better today. And sometimes they start in a formation and they see it doesn't work because our team we play against is prepared for that, so we have to find a new solution. And one of the important ingredients today of a modern manager is to make quick decisions during the game and have action through the flexibility of the formation of his team.
I think that's a really interesting point about the decision making, because we always talk about the decision making capacity of the players to assess the environment they're in, see what's on, make the decision and execute it as quickly as possible and at high quality as possible. But the role of the coach is probably, because the game's evolving so much, the role of the coach and the impact they can have in a game is also evolving.
Yes, and you sit there when you're a coach and sometimes you feel that's the moment I have to make a decision, but you wait a bit longer, you know, you think, or maybe I wait for 5 minutes more and you're punished. And you go home and you think, I lost the game today because I knew I had to make that decision. So the speed of the execution of your decision is vital as well. And the coaching staff and the players have to be prepared to come on. And I would say today, what I noticed in the trend in the last 4 years is that more than ever, the substitutes are really focused. They are much better focused and prepared when they come on. They have a clarity about their mission and they are 100% in the game straight away. Before, sometimes you had players coming on soaking just to show that they were not happy not to start the game. That is over now. The team is a team on the bench as well. And the success of a World Cup will depend as well how much everybody can be a team on the bench as well.
And that's something that Jill Ellis spoke to us about in Costa Rica at the Women's Under 20 World Cup, was that concept of substitutions actually being game changers when they come into the game.
Yes, because maybe as well you have more quality on the benches today than before, and the difference between the top 11 and the 11 who sit on the bench is not as big as it was before. And as well because the players mentally accept it much better and they know they have an important part to play and they are prepared for that. So on that front, I would say football has moved forward a lot.
What we've seen here is a classic example of how these chats evolve and the time goes so quickly, and you could talk for absolutely hours. And sometimes, Arsene, as you say, they can get quite intense, these discussions. But Chris, I guess this is really where the whole concept of this has come from, these chats in the cars, these chats around the table when we're discussing the football at the tournaments.
Yeah, and look, we were at the FIFA Arab Cup, which was the test event this time last year for the World Cup, and obviously this was almost part of the pandemic or still part of the pandemic. So we had Jürgen Klinsmann was on Zoom in Newport Beach in LA, and we had people in the car in Qatar, and we had people around the world. And basically after every game, regardless of whether we're in the car or on Zoom, we joined a Zoom call and we just discussed the game, you know. But the level of detail in that discussion, the technical, tactical, physical analysis happening was high.
I believe that we want to make this available to the coaches, to the media, to the fans. And part of the beauty of a World Cup is as well, is to walk in a restaurant and see people after the game talking about the game. It's part of a pleasure. It's during the game, but as well, much after the game. And we want to be part of that discussion with the way we feed the information and the way to give them more tools to talk about the game. You know, that's one of the beauties of the game.
And I think that's also with Qatar, this World Cup is so unique, is you can go and watch two games a day. I think that's one of the most exciting things. So our idea, Arsene, is that we finish watching the game, we get in the car, as we're driving to the next stadium, we're actually going to record this podcast, record the insights of Jürgen, record the insights of Pascal Zouboula and yourself. And very shortly after that game's finished, this podcast is going to be available for fans around the world to listen to.
And it's going to be really exciting. And I'm sure there's going to be great, intense chats and very multifaceted discussions and something for everyone, I guess, to look forward. So Chris and Arsene, thank you so much for this introductory chat and really, really looking forward to how it all evolves over the next month.
You've been listening to FIFA Insight Live, a Highway 61 production for FIFA Training Centre. For more information and insights throughout the 2022 FIFA World Cup, visit fifatrainingcentre.com.